Hi, I'm Emily Rawlings.
And I'm Kayla Connick. Welcome to Forget Dis, taking the dis out of disabilities.
We are music therapists from Dynamic Music Therapy in Las Vegas, Nevada. This podcast highlights people who live with unique challenges that they have transformed. We will meet people from different walks of life, discuss how music therapy can help in specific ways, and present how to and how not to talk to people with disabilities.
I am autistic. For me, it means I have different sensory experiences. All food has too much flavor, blander's better, everything is usually too loud, my threshold is negative. I have reduced perception of temperature and perceptions. I have no visual recall, which means I easily get lost and don't recognize people. Many clothes are distracting or uncomfortable. For me, it means being a better communicator in writing than out loud. It means needing structure to not be overwhelmed. It means working hard to figure out what my body needs, whether that be eating, sleeping, to run around, if I'm tired. You just listened to a written excerpt from our guest today, Elizabeth, on what it means to be autistic and her experience. In the following interview, you're about to listen to Emily and I talk with Elizabeth on how she perceives the world and explains how we can better connect with autism. Unbeknownst to us, she is a music therapist as well, so you hear a bit about the work that she does too. This was a particularly interesting interview for Emily and I, as we realized we caught ourselves in our own preconceived notion of how to begin approaching the topic of autism with Elizabeth. At the beginning of the interview, I definitely felt like I was beating around the bush and struggling to ask Elizabeth about being autistic. It made us realize how much we need the show and how much we have yet to learn from all of our guests. And now, on to the interview. Welcome to Forget Dis. It's good to have you on.
Yeah.
So, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself? If you have any favorite music that you like to listen to, where you're from?
Well, I love music. I love my hands. And for fun, I like to play basketball.
Ooh, basketball. Nice.
I'm from the Kansas City area, and my favorite music is Billy Joel.
Billy Joel, all right.
Billy Joel. Piano man.
Basketball is always really fun. I think it's the funnest sport to watch. Well, and play, but definitely like the most entertaining to watch when you go to a basketball game. Yeah.
Although I like soccer. I like watching soccer.
Oh, yeah, soccer's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, basically, on Forget Dis, we like to feature people that have overcome challenges in their life. And we're trying to kind of educate and advocate to the public what it's like to experience these challenges, and also how these people can treat us with dignity, basically. What are some of the challenges that you've faced in your life?
I get lost a lot. That's a big one for me. And then I don't recognize people. So I have these conversations with people, and if they know me well, they introduce themselves. And if not, I pretend I know them. Or I have to ask them, so who are you? And then they'll say, you know. Like in college, I had a choir class, and after that, I went to another building, and then someone said hi to me on the stairs, and I had no idea who it was, so I asked. It was my choir director.
Oh.
Yeah. So that kind of stuff happens a lot to me.
Yeah. So not, yeah, being able to recognize people. Yeah, no, that can be tough.
So do you feel like you perceive the world differently than other people?
Yeah, I think so.
In what ways?
Well, I don't focus on a lot of what people consider important, like socially. I don't worry too much about matching clothes or impressions. I focus more on the content rather than the presentation.
I see.
And so, I think a lot of people want to do that, but it's hard for them. So I'm pretty lucky in that that comes naturally to me.
Yeah, that it's not just all about surface level, that you can go a little bit deeper.
What did you study in college?
I studied music therapy at KU.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure that I ever knew that.
Hey!
Wow. That's great. How far are you in your education?
I'm finished with my degree program. I graduated in 2013 and got my board certification in early 2014.
Nice. Are you working as a music therapist right now?
Yes.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Who do you work with?
Well, I run my own private practice, so I just work with the families I serve.
Oh, very cool. So yeah, just like us here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome that you're a music therapist. What was your primary instrument?
Trombone.
Trombone. Ooh, I've never known. Trombone player that was a music therapist.
I knew one that was in my...
I've never met another either.
Yeah.
There was Joel Olson at my school. He was a trombone player and a music therapy student.
That's awesome.
Now, I have a question. At your university or at your school, were they heavily focused on teaching person-first language?
Yes, that came up in a lot of classes.
Okay.
What is most respectful.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that? Because I know there's been actually now some debate on what is preferred.
Are you asking me as a person or a professional?
Oh,
both.
Let's hear both.
Well, if I'm talking about me, I use identity-first language, which means not that I have autism, but that I'm autistic.
Okay.
But as a professional, I try to use neutral language and say, you know, so-and-so is on the autism spectrum.
I find that really interesting because I actually have the same feelings. I'm hearing impaired, and I don't say I am a person with a hearing impairment. I just say I'm hearing impaired. I'm deaf, you know, but I'll refer to other people with that person-first language.
Yeah. So, I mean, I use a person-first unless, like, on paper, if I can't work it in to use neutral language, I'll use person-first unless I hear that somebody has a different preference. Mm-hmm. But for myself, I use identity-first.
For identity, okay.
Give me an example of neutral language.
Billy is on the autism spectrum. Billy has autism, not Billy's autistic, but on the spectrum.
Yeah, we were actually having this discussion probably about a week or so ago. And yeah, that's most like what I use as a professional is neutral,
mm-hmm.
say on the spectrum. And that seems to be the safest, I feel.
Yes,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So as a person, why do you prefer identity first?
Changed me to not be autistic, then it wouldn't be me anymore.
Right.
The way I am, my preferences, how I do things, why I do things, I wouldn't be recognizable. Even the people who are good at recognizing people.
No, that makes sense. Definitely. Yeah, it is. It's who you are.
So I have, these are my favorite questions to ask in these kinds of interviews, but what is the dumbest thing that you've ever had someone ask you?
I get asked pretty regularly if I can drive.
Wow.
So that's an interesting one. At the airport, I've been asked where my traveling companion is.
Gosh, how do you respond to that?
yes, I can drive. And, my traveling companion is at the other end of the airplane, or at the, you know, I tell them it's the other end of the trip. Don't pick me up.
I'll meet them when I drive there.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's amazing. Wow. I wonder why people make that assumption.
I don't know.
That's a weird one.
I think I look pretty nervous in airports, to be fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you get, I get airport anxiety for sure. There's something about airports.
Yeah, I try not to do them a lot, but last time I was there, that was the question.
Man, yeah, that's a silly one. Any others? Any other really just kind of off the wall, interesting questions that you've gotten?
I have a favorite question.
Ooh, what's that?
I got asked by a student, sometime in the past year, I think. Miss Elizabeth, am I your only student with a special brain?
Oh.
So I just, I had been teaching piano and that came up, and it's funny to hear how parents tell kids about their disabilities and the language they use, but I just kind of go with it, and that led to a really great discussion on what it means to have a special brain.
Yeah.
I really like that one.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. A special brain. Yeah.
That's cool. So you teach piano as well?
Yeah, I do. I do lessons. I do some music therapy, but I prefer the lessons side of it. And most of my students have disabilities.
Okay.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll have to connect with you sometime outside of the interview because I've been wanting to create like a method book in helping piano teachers be able to adapt their lessons to people that learn differently.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
So what? So you play trombone, you play piano. What else do you play?
Trumpet, guitar, the regular therapy stuff. basically therapy plus brass.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
I come from a family full of brass players. There's 10 kids in my family, and there's a trombone, trombone slash tuba.
Ooh, tuba.
Trumpet, French horn. I'm missing somebody, but you know, there's a whole bunch of brass.
Ooh, French
in
horn. It's like the hardest instrument.
Yeah. And then I'm the anomaly.
Yeah,
with piano. I play percussion. Although my sister also played oboe. So,
man, wow. I don't come from a musical family. I'm kind of the black sheep.
Actually. You were telling us that you have a hard time with remembering people. How does that affect your social life?
When I design an environment, people have name tags. I think, for the most part, I like to see people in the same places if I can. And if I'm going to see them somewhere else, I tell them in advance. But, hey, you know, if you see me at another place, just let me know who you are. Remind me. I've gotten really good at asking people who they are without making them feel strange.
Yeah.
I use a phrase, remind me how I know you.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Do you feel that people get kind of off-put if you ask them, hey, who are you?
if they don't know me well sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like if that's ever happened to me, people get they're a little offended. They're like, you don't remember me? We blah, 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 blah. And you're like, yeah. And that's the point where you start to pretend like, oh, yeah, I remember. And then they ask you details about your encounter and you're like,
I let people know that it's not that I don't remember who they are, it's that I can't match a face to who they are.
So what do you match?
I'll match a voice, or, you know, it's some, like, my friend George, he uses a wheelchair, so I pretty much recognize him all the time.
Yeah.
But I match voices, or I just use a lot of context clues. I can guide a conversation to, you know, something like, oh my gosh, I feel like I haven't seen you in forever. And then kind of get them talking about the last time we saw each other and try and figure out where that was.
Oh, yeah. It's like the death smile and nod until you figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Nice. So, how would you describe autism?
Well, I think it's different for every person and it looks different, but it's a combination of sensory and social experiences and ways of being. I think that a lot of times it makes more sense to me than neurotypical or non-autistic brains.
I would imagine so.
A lot of times it's logical. It makes more sense. It can be hard when there's lots of things going on at the same time or when the schedule changes. But everyone's got their own different ways of experiencing, especially senses, and I think that it's hard to say what it looks like for other people.
What has been the progression in your life with experiencing that?
What do you mean?
I'm not sure that I was just like, did that question make any sense? Right, I was telling Kayla earlier, I have a sick baby, and sick babies mean no sleep. So, has your autism looked different as a child than it does now for you?
Yes, I think it's a lot different. And, you know, I went back to my high school for an IEP meeting for one of my students one time and saw somebody I know and they didn't recognize me. So I think when I was younger, I hadn't figured out to be in the world without getting overwhelmed as much. So I was always looking down. I didn't look up very much, and now I tend to look up when I'm going places because I am more confident in navigating my environment, knowing what's coming. I feel like I'm better prepared to handle changes. So that's, you know, looking down to looking up. I think I definitely talk a lot more than I used to.
Mm-hmm. And that confidence you gained, how did or what helped you gain that?
I think it was my 10th grade math class.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah? How so?
Well, I really, really, really liked math. And so I was a grade up from the people that, you know, I wasn't with. I was in an 11th grade math class as a 10th grader. And so I didn't know anybody, which was fine because I kept to myself. And then this girl sat by me, and she was really nice, but she was really not good at math. And she learned some sign language, and so she and I got to communicating, and I was motivated to help her with math, and that just gave me a lot of confidence.
That's cool. I really used to enjoy math. I used to be really good at
really?
Math. Until pre-calculus. And then it was just absolutely incomprehensible to me. The abstract is too challenging for me.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. That was my favorite class.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Freak out. Mine was trigonometry. For some reason, I was never, math never came easy to me, but I really enjoyed trig. And then I had a hard time with geometry, though.
Geometry is a different kind of beast, if you will.
It seemed like it. It was a beast, for sure, to say the least. Very intimidating to me. What's your favorite branch of mathematics?
I've always been really good in calculus.
Calculus. I never made
it.
But
also pre-calculus.
For some reason I can't. I know I took pre-calc, but I can't remember it.
Oh yeah.
So apparently maybe I didn't like it very much.
I don't know. I guess I was just a little bit too it took me too long to figure out that I wasn't very good at it because when I was still kind of floundering around trying to figure out what I should do with my life, I was a music performance major first, and I was like, yeah, this isn't working, and that's when I was starting to think, I want to be able to be in some kind of helping profession. I wanted to be maybe a special ed teacher in the deaf school, and so I thought, well, what can I teach? Obviously, I'm not going to teach music in the deaf school. That's not not a common thing for that. I thought, oh, math. And so I took calculus in college and absolutely bombed it. Ugh. So what did I do? I took the next calculus class.
Oh, well.
It's funny how life
worked
out.
It didn't work. That's finally when I went, nope, this is not it.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I found music therapy.
I know, thank God. I'm so happy music therapy showed up in my life as an option.
Yeah.
Yes. How did you find out about music therapy?
When I was in high school, I really liked math, but I also really liked music, and so people were encouraging me to consider a career as a music educator, and I like music, but I don't like performing for perfection. You know, I think music has a lot of benefits, and so that the transition specialist at my high school introduced me to Barry Bernstein. His name was Bongo Barry, and so I got to shadow him as a high schooler, and then I worked for him in the summers, and that's how I grew to know and love the field.
Yeah, that's kind of, I have a similar kind of experience because I went to a this performing high school, and so they're really heavy on performing, right? And I ironically have like severe performance anxiety. So I knew that that was not for me, although I loved music. So I was kind of torn up until I found out about a music therapist here in Las Vegas. And I was like, what is music therapy? Whoa.
Yeah.
And it sounded like just, yeah, the perfect marriage of a helping profession and music. So
yes.
Yeah. And it was just immediately enamoring, and I knew that it's what I wanted to do.
Do you teach trombone students as well as piano students?
I do have one right now. I've had a couple trumpet students in the past, and now I have one student on trombone.
It's not as common as piano students.
I wasn't sure that I'd ever use it. in therapy or lessons, just because it didn't really fit into what we were taught in our clinical courses.
Yeah.
For the most part. I mean, there was one example I can remember Dr. Claire talking about somebody was using trombone after a stroke to regain strength on one side.
Yeah. But,
that's not my population. And I'm like, well, am I ever going to use this instrument? But I keep it out, and I found that a lot of students really like it.
Yeah, I feel like it's very novel. They see it, and they're like, what is that?
Well, I could see it really building breath support, and that's really important part of speech development.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, now my brain's, like, spinning. I don't play trombone, but how would I use trombone?
That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, as a music therapist, I'm like, how could I use a trombone in a session? That'd be cool.
Yeah.
I took trumpet in fifth grade. I did not really get on, but sure. It was changing.
Yeah, it takes time, for sure. Mm-hmm. I started off as a trumpet player for a long time, too.
I had a friend in when I was going to school at Maryville in St. Louis, and she was a trumpet player, and she wanted to learn violin. So I'm very much a strings player, and that's all I knew. And so she was like, oh, I'll teach you trumpet if you teach me violin. I'm like, okay, yeah. And it took me weeks just to get a scale on the trumpet, and I would almost like pass out from trying to like just use enough breath to like get it out and like make my lips do the thing that they're supposed to do. So it's trumpet's really cool, but it's difficult. For me it was.
Yeah.
Well, Elizabeth, if you wanted the listeners of this podcast to get one thing out of this conversation, what would be the most important thing that you want them to hear?
I would say the most important is to not make assumptions about people. I don't know. That's one of them. I would say it's good to ask questions. People are always scared to talk about disabilities, and I think that's silly. It shouldn't be a weird thing for me to say, hey, you know, I have open trouble recognizing people, so I might ask you who you are if I see you somewhere. And that makes people uncomfortable, and I don't think it should.
Yeah,
it's an odd thing to be uncomfortable about. I agree.
Well, and that's why, you know, that's the whole point of our podcast, really, is to try to open up those conversations and help people feel okay about talking with people with disabilities and realizing that it's
not the scary thing.
Yeah.
I feel like you have, it's funny because on one end you have people that are afraid to even approach or talk to someone with a disability, or you have people that are super presumptuous and make those assumptions that we're talking. For example, asking you the question, can you drive?
Yeah.
So it's like helping people find that good in-between.
It seems to be a very common theme so far. I mean, it's not like we've had a whole lot of episodes out yet, but it seems to be a common theme with many of our guests is that don't assume. Don't assume that we can't.
I believe it. We don't do a lot of teaching about this is like making it part of the regular growing up learning process in school, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, is there anything else you want to share? I know this is totally catching you off guard because for some reason I didn't know that you were a musician, but would you be interested in playing something for us? Are you near an instrument?
I am near instruments. I'm always near instruments.
They're everywhere.
I don't know if this is something you'd be interested in, but I did stand-up comedy in March about...
Oh, nice.
Well, there's a fundraiser for a group. I sit on the board of directors for a camp for kids on the autism spectrum. And we had a fundraiser where usually it's parents that get up and they do stand-up comedy and they talk about some of the funny situations you encounter when you have kids on the spectrum. And this year they let me get up, and so I talked about some of the funny things that happen when you're autistic and you have neurotypical parents and just how you see the world. And so one of the things I did was I did a parody song. So I'm not playing, I'm singing.
Oh my gosh, I think I would love that.
Is that something
Yeah, can we? We would
today?
Love to hear that.
Oh, definitely.
It's to the song Royals by Lorde.
Uh-huh. Oh, perfect.
Nice.
And it's called Normal.
Yeah, we would love to hear that.
Well, as you heard, I'm not quite like everyone else you've seen on stage tonight. I'm a little bit different. I'm not a parent, thank you, God. That's the reason I actually had time to practice for upset. I gave up serious notes after getting served detention in ninth grade for skipping gym class. I did not skip gym class. I was in speech therapy. It's okay. I'm over it. Not in a prepositional sense, of course. Sounds scary, but I've heard it's not terrible. Stories about my parents who have neurotypicality fit two themes: transportation and the gorilla suit. Transportation is a blessing when it helps a family keeps its routines, but in times of vacations, it is a bitch. Vacation is when parents take you away from all that is familiar, enter a new place, and do nothing. On purpose. For pleasure. Relax, they say. Tell me, how do I relax? How do I do that in this strange place? As is typical for neurotypicals, this is considered enjoyable. Sometimes, vacation involves airports, and you know that's a bad idea. There's one big goal for navigating an airport: don't look suspicious. Got it? Objectives for this goal include: do not give yourself a pep talk. You look suspicious. Do not rock. You look suspicious. When you do rock in the body scan machine, prepare for personal space baseball, because a DSA agent who pats you down will probably get to third base. Stray from your traveling companion because you look suspicious. If you're lucky though, vacation might just mean a car ride. I learned a lot about cars, well, at least car maintenance, from my dad's old minivan, affectionately called the trash mobile. Problem: radio won't turn on, or radio won't turn off. Solution: bang the dash hard twice. Comes right back on or shuts up. Problem: driver's side door won't stay shut. Solution: crack the driver's side windows and use strong rope. Loop through, around, through, pull. There's a minor inconvenience of the driver needing to enter and exit the vehicle from the passenger side, but the door stays shut. Problem: dash no longer turns the radio on or off. Solution: put a battery-operated boombox between the driver and passenger seat. Crank the volume to drown out the car radio. By the end of its life, that radio had a mind of its own. Not unlike my father at Halloween. He had a full gorilla costume, complete with feet covers, gloves, and a mask that covered his whole head. He liked to answer the door. Kids would say, trick or treat. And depending on their age, Dad, known year-round as the Candy Man, might choose to give them a treat, or he might choose to hear a trick, which meant they had to perform to earn their candy. Teenagers frequently sang the Barney song on our porch. Talk about positive reinforcement. The Halloween after my youngest brother was no longer in diapers, Dad changed it up. Little girls got candy, older girls got diapers. I know you parents are panicking. Don't worry, they were clean. Dad said they would come in handy for babysitting. And as he liked to say, you have to make your own fun. I have a lot of fun memories with Dad, and some not-so-fun memories. See, both my parents wanted me to drive. In time, I became a proficient driver, mostly practicing with Dad. Mom would get tense and yell more. Neurotypicals do that sometimes, you know. They think it helps. I'm a safe driver with a good record, except the time I was involved in a hit and run with a pedestrian. I was startled, but I did as they taught me. I brought the name and number of a pedestrian and a witness home to show my concerned parents. Imagine their pride and relief upon hearing that a pedestrian on drugs sprinted out of the bushes and hit my stationary car at a red light trying to run from the scene. Don't worry, no airbags were deployed. I was fine, lucky to walk away without a scratch.
Well, it's been really, really fun talking with you, Elizabeth, and getting to know a lot about you. Thank you so much for being on our podcast.
You're welcome.
We hope you have a great rest of your day.
Have a good afternoon.
Thanks.
Bye, Elizabeth.
Bye.